Back together again, you and I chatting it up and wrapping up a very busy week on Friday, August 16th, 2024, on Connecticut Today, where I took a look at what some folks say is unclear wording in a description of a statewide ballot question for this coming November. Fairfield GOP State Senator Tony Wong dropped by with the latest developments on an electric bill controversy, as well as news of an upcoming health insurance rate increase proposal due next week. And former Bridgeport Democratic State Rep. Chris Caruso talked about this past Tuesday's local primary results. All right, we'll get to an update on the situation here with the change.org petition that you folks have been emailing me to get the link to, so we'll keep you updated on that. There is maybe a little movement because so many thousands of you people are banding together, you folks on the left, you folks on the right, you folks right smack on the double yellow line in the middle, getting together saying, hey, look, stop the finger pointing here. Something needs to be done somehow, some way on this electric bill stuff, even if it's only to save you a few bucks a month. So we'll get to that. Also, Kamala Harris is taking the wraps off of her economic plan. I've got details on that coming up. You can plainly see where this is aimed. Along with that, a very prominent black and African-American member of the media community is, and he's leaving no doubt about this, we'll get to this later on, he is calling on Kamala Harris to start talking to the media, to start talking to the press, to start giving interviews, to start doing news conferences, to start doing even one-on-one sit-downs with maybe some friendly outlets. And this this person here, this gentleman who doesn't beat around the bush, will play the two-minute clip from him coming up. He says, hey, if you're going to run on the Biden platform and results that you say you are a part of, then it's only right you take questions about that, right? So we'll have that coming up. First, though, before we start on all of that, and welcome, great to have you with us. Now, we have this funny business going on at the General Assembly regarding electric bills here, and maybe now they've seen the about 50,000 people that have signed this petition, and maybe they're a little worried about this. But we'll get to that later. I want to talk about, and I promise I will keep you updated on this, because there is also some sleight of hand going on here a little bit with this push that, although it doesn't say it by name, it would in a couple of years. It's not going to happen right away, but there is a key ballot question coming up here in Connecticut in the fall that would eventually give the state pretty much, although again, it doesn't actually say it, it would give the state mail-in voting. Now, you may say, well, wait a minute. Where did this come from? I haven't heard about anything about no excuse mail-in voting. Well, you're right. Because the Democratic majority in the state House and in the state Senate and in the governor's mansion, they're going out of their way not to call it mail-in voting. But that's exactly what it would be. They prefer to refer to it as a no-excuse absentee balloting, meaning that if there is a change granted by the people to legislators to change the state's constitution, now this is not easy to do, but the first step in this is coming up in November. If you people, the fine voters of Connecticut, say yes to this, and I urge you to vote no, and I'll explain why, this would essentially allow no-excuse absentee balloting, which is mail-in voting. Now, there's a story here from yesterday. It broke late yesterday in the Connecticut Mirror, Mark Pazniokas' story. The fine print is divisive in this no-excuse absentee voting proposal for Connecticut. And I need you to know about this and understand what's going on here. Now, you may say, hey, I don't think we should have, you know, a set of rules for absentee balloting. If people want an absentee ballot, they should be able to get one and not have to give a reason. Okay, we can debate that, but then what happens is this, in essence, becomes mail-in voting. And there are states, a handful of them, I think primarily in the West and Northwest, that do engage in mail-in voting. That's not the problem. The problem is how it's being presented here, and the fact that some of this wording is a little too funky for some people's liking. Story by Mark Pazniokas in the Connecticut Mirror talks about state voters being asked in November whether the Connecticut state constitution, now remember, there's a U.S. constitution and there is a, each state has their own constitution, whether Connecticut's constitution should be amended to allow no excuse absentee voting. In other words, hey, I want to use an absentee ballot, but I don't necessarily want to fit into the handful of reasons that you have to show. You're going to be out of town. You're going to be working in another voting precinct. You're on active duty with the military. You've got a physical infirmity. There's a handful of things that you have to attest to, at least one of them, to say, in a sense, this is why I want an absentee ballot. Now, the wording of the referendum is very innocuous, and there's already partisan bickering about this, because it doesn't actually say what would happen here. See, this is where you got to be careful about this stuff, and you have to read between the lines here. Because nowhere in the wording of this question are people told, hey, by doing this, you're essentially allowing mail-in voting, which, again, in and of itself is probably what we're going to go to eventually, but it doesn't say that. Now, here's what it says. This is the question that you're going to have to answer yes or no to in November. And unless I see some unexpected changes real quick, I am a hard no on this one. That's just me. I'm not telling you how to vote, but be careful. The resolution that was passed by the Democratic-controlled House and Senate reads the following, and I'll read it to you. This is the referendum question that's going to appear on the ballots in November. Quote, shall the Constitution of the state be amended to permit the General Assembly to allow each voter to vote by absentee ballot? Again, quoting again, shall the Constitution of the state be amended to permit the General Assembly to allow each voter to vote by absentee ballot? Now, a couple of things here. Number one, if a majority votes yes on that, nothing happens right away. There is a legal pathway that must be handled for this. Okay? But at issue here, the second thing is, as Mark Pazniokas points out, is that whether a legislative committee would sign off on a two-paragraph, 100-word explanation drafted by the nonpartisan Office of Legislative Research indicating what that would actually do. So understand, along with the question being there on the ballot, there's also going to be, I guess, an explanation here. So follow along here. So you're going to have to answer yes or no on this. And here's the explanation. Under the current state constitution, now this gets a little wonkish, just bear with me here. Under the current state constitution, qualified voters may cast an absentee vote only if they're unable to vote in person at their polling place on election day due to 1, absence from their city or town, 2, a physical disability, or sickness, and or 3, their religious beliefs prohibit secular activity on that day. So the explanation begins with that. Under the current state constitution, qualified voters in Connecticut may cast an absentee vote only if they're unable to vote in person due to 1, being out of town, absence from their city or town, 2, sickness or physical disability, and or 3, religious beliefs prohibit secular activity on that day. Now, the second paragraph of the explanation for this constitutional question reads as follows, quote, if this amendment is approved, the state constitution would no longer limit the reasons why absentee voting may be used. Therefore, it would expand the state legislature's authority to pass laws regarding voting by qualified voters who will not appear at their polling place on election day. So in this initial paragraph and the two paragraphs here, several Republicans, the loyal opposition in Hartford, have a problem with us, with this. You know what they say the problem is? Well, I'll leave you guessing on it. So again, I'm going to read this. And here's the question. Do people really understand what this is about? Now, Republicans in Hartford are saying, hey, this is a little word salad here to cover up what the actual thing that's going on here is. So once again, there's two issues here. All right? So the question that you're going to have to answer here is, shall the Constitution of the state be amended to permit the General Assembly to allow each voter to vote by absentee ballot? Then they explain, under the current Constitution, qualified voters may cast an absentee ballot only if they are unable to vote in person at their polling place on election day due to an absence from their city or town, sickness or physical disability, or their religious beliefs prevent them from a secular activity. If this is approved, the state constitution would no longer limit the reasons why absentee voting may be used. Therefore, it would expand the state legislature's authority to pass laws regarding voting by qualified voters who will not appear at their polling place on election day. Now, the Republicans are saying, they're not actually using these words, but I am. The Republicans are saying, hey, you're going all Kamala Harris on us. They're not saying that I am, meaning you're using a word salad to cover up what this thing actually is. This hour's update, again, we'll do this like the old Jerry Lewis telethon. The petition now at change.org demanding the governor and Pira do something with this public benefits charge is now at 46,090 people, almost 5,700 people signing up today. So when you make your voices heard through talk radio, through going to the Capitol, through speaking to the media, just the way you did on the sales moratorium on internal combustion cars, on taxes and everything, lawmakers do actually pay attention. Tony Wong joins us, Republican State Senate member, Fairfield. Tony, good afternoon. How are you?
Good afternoon, Paul. And indeed, we are listening. And,
well, people speak, Tony. I know it's not that big of a state, Tony. And when you get 35, 40, 45,000 people signing on to something, I know you guys and gals start to pay attention there.
But, Paul, we've always been paying attention as Senate Republicans. In fact, we talk often about how unaffordable Connecticut is. What this utility skyrocketing cost is, they just put a couple of hundred additional dollars and broke the camel's back. People need to remember that we have one of the highest utility costs in all of the United States, even before this. And ultimately, what happened is the public benefit got some transparency, because in the past, it was always hidden in the bill. So that's something that we did as Senate Republicans in saying, you need transparency and accountability. So now you have the explanation. But unfortunately, even if they try to hit it without this public benefit box, people are feeling it in the pocketbooks. And in light of inflationary pressure, and truly, Connecticut is unaffordable. I love this state, but there are so many people, the combination of so many additional costs, and post-COVID and the challenges in being able to do business and the quality of life concerns, Connecticut has again become unaffordable, but this time it really hurts people.
Yeah, Tony, what is, and again, the good people who listen to these shows and shows all over the state and maybe watch news for a few minutes a day, they may not be as steeped in this as you are with the Republican caucus and as I am here and the other talk show hosts that you speak to around the state. Why is it so expensive? Is it the network? Is it the generating cost? Is it the contract for the nuclear power? I mean, people hear this, Tony, what you just said, and they tell their cousins in Florida or their brother-in-law in Texas or their former boss in Minnesota what they pay here, and people can't believe it.
Well, it's hard to comprehend, and it has accumulated over time, Paul, that the legislative body, look, there's a blame game going on because there's an election year coming up. But to me, I'm looking at solutions, and the solution needs to be where Democrats and Republicans go back into a special session. I think it is absolutely imperative that we go back into a special session and collaboratively and bipartisanly create and find the solutions that we neglected to address during the session. So when we look at this, you're hearing from me, a Republican, saying that both Democrats and Republicans need to go back in and find a solution and stop with the blame game. We need to fix this issue because most of the people, your listeners, think that the legislature as a whole, along with the executive branch, as well as the regulatory bodies, are all guilty of missing something and putting it on the backs of unaffordable Connecticut consumers. So with that as a verdict, let's get back to work. And I'm glad to hear that the governor has heard my personal call and many of our calls to get into special session and really look at some of the issues that we addressed. For example, the possibility of the COVID shutoff moratorium liability, instead of putting it into a two-year period, stretch it to 10.
Sure.
Another solution that I've offered is to take a look at how we are putting through these costs onto consumers. Many of the energy efficient programs, the light bulbs and the energy efficiency tests, they're really important. But we should, as Senate Republicans have proposed, take that out of the pass-through that goes to the ratepayer and have the legislature be accountable. If we believe it to be important, we need to legislate it and we need to put it into the budget. It cannot be another hidden fee slash tax onto the consumer. Another important solution is to make our utilities, which is a virtual monopoly, to understand that their overall business operations need to be considered in regards to rate. Because right now, it is only on the energy generation side in which that we have only control through the regulatory bodies to regulate. The other aspects of their business, for example, one of the bills that we passed through bipartisanly was to take away the pass-through costs to ratepayers for the millions of dollars of lobbying costs that the utilities use. We took that away.
Yeah.
How were they passing that through to ratepayers? There are many other examples in which utilities operating as a multi-business conglomerate, mm-hmm. gets subsidized on energy delivery while they benefit on all the other businesses side. I think we need to consider their overall business operation mm-hmm. as part of the rate setting basis. It seems to me, and this is something you've heard many times, Paul, and I've heard it from your listeners, that these utilities seem to care more about Wall Street than Main Street.
Tony, before we get to something you wanted to touch on here about insurance in the final couple of minutes we have, I wanted to ask you, just irrespective of who's currently in the General Assembly on the Republican side, on the Democratic side, in the state Senate, or in the state House, or for that matter, who's in the governor's mansion, does the framework work here? In other words, you have the General Assembly, you have the executive branch, and then you have PURA. And believe me, I'm not here to pillory anybody who serves on a regulatory authority like PURA. I'm sure other states have them. Is the balance of power, is that working, do you think? Is that something down the line that maybe has to be adjusted or not? Irresponsible of who's on the board.
Paul, I agree. PURA needs to be reflective of a balanced approach to energy delivery and energy regulation. We passed as a legislature 2 years ago to increase the body from 3 to 5. Mm. Governor Lamont has not added the 2 additional people. Now, the past record of those commissioners who do a very admirable job, it's very difficult.
Sure.
But most of them come from the utilities industry. Until recently, Marissa Gillette came from Maryland, and she came as, quote, a disruptor because she didn't come from the utility background. She came from a diverse background.
Yep.
And she has upset the equilibrium, so to speak, in rate reviews, accountability, and transparency. And the utilities don't like it. We have other potential commissioners that have grown and have been sensitive and understand the utility business. We have 2 more openings that I would encourage to have greater consumer advocacy, a greater balance of different perspectives. So one, yes, the governor should appoint 2 more individuals to the Public Utilities Regulatory Authority that governs the rate setting, that brings a consumer perspective. But I think the other part is really to get engaged and understand that what are the causes of these incredible costs.
Yeah.
Make no mistake about it, Paul. There are considerations for us as a state to move toward renewable energy to reduce greenhouse gas emissions. That's going to come at a cost. But nevertheless, it can't come at a blinded view that puts undue and unaffordable pressure on Connecticut. As by the recent EV surplus, we already have an outrageously skyrocketing bill.
Yeah.
It's tone deaf to say, we're going to approve that and add more cost to it.
Tony,
it's absolutely tone deaf, Paul.
Talking about, you know, you go back to a premise of people I know that do stand-up comedy. What's the first thing? They tell the first couple of jokes, and then it's time to read the room. Did I get a laugh on that, or did I get an applause line? And if you're reading the room, right, and it ain't working, you got to shift gears. Tony, in about the 90 seconds we have left here, I know there's something coming up with health care costs. What's up with that?
As I said, Connecticut is unaffordable. And for those that are individuals and small businesses that do not have big corporations supplementing their health insurance, it has absolutely been astronomical in its increases. We're having another rate increase request, public hearing, and it is another double-digit close increase.
Wow.
We're looking at the past 10 years, from my experience, that we've had double-digit increase requests every single year. So small individuals and small businesses, which are the lifeline of the state, are getting crushed, and we've had solutions. So this coming August 20th at 9 a.m., we are going to have a public hearing to review the rate request on the existing. There are only a few now existing companies that are setting the rates, and they're requesting double digits again. We can't afford to put that additional burden on small businesses and individuals. But ultimately, people's voices need to be heard. As you said earlier, Paul, this energy cost issue has really lit people's fire.
Yep.
Add on to it unaffordable health care for themselves and their loved ones. They need to have their voices be heard. It really has combined an unaffordable Connecticut And you know, as we get into politics, people get emotional. They get upset about other things.
Yeah.
But boy, oh boy, add it all up together, it's going to be really difficult. And what about those that are living paycheck to paycheck?
Oh, my God.
This is just going to break their back.
Yeah. Tony, thank you. We'll keep an eye on that insurance situation there. We'll get back to you on that. Tony, have a good weekend. We appreciate it.
Thank you, Paul.
All right. Appreciate that. Republican State Senate member Tony Wong. Chris Caruso joins us again. Chris, everything okay there?
Yeah, Paul.
So, Chris, we were talking about the results in the 22nd. You endorsed a newcomer there, a professor, a law professor at Quinnipiac, and you would mention you thought she would do well because one of her key issues was trying to reform things with absentee ballots.
Oh, absolutely, Paul. I met with all the candidates, and I knew all of them except Sujata. I didn't know her. And she called me one day if I could meet with her, and I did. And I was just thoroughly impressed, I'll be honest with you. New face, new ideas, new leadership for the district. And, you know, as I said, I haven't endorsed candidates over the years, but it was just a natural for me to do it. And I think one of the questions I had asked her was about absentee ballot reform, especially in Bridgeport. And she, you know, is a constitutional lawyer. She practices law, but she teaches law in Quinnipiac University, the law school there. And so we got talking about it, and she embraced it, that she would work to reform the absentee ballot system. And that, to me, was paramount. The other candidates, frankly, haven't been talking about it. And even with a mail piece that she sent out was exclusively toward reforming the absentee ballot system, where the other candidates didn't. And that said a lot to me, that she was willing to take on that fight. And I think her message was right in the district. It was about quality of life issues. You know, primaries are local. They're very much who you know, calling up those voters, getting them out to vote, talking about issues that are local. And I think she was just spot on. And I think that had a big part in her winning on primary day last Tuesday. And now she goes into the general election, of course, and hopefully she'll be successful there as well. And, she worked very hard, door-to-door, meeting the voters, going to events where voters were, talking to them. And I think that has a big, big effect on whether or not a person can win. And in her case, she won. And I'm happy for her. I really am. And I'm happy for the district. I live here, Paul. And, you know, on your show, I've been talking about absentee ballot abuse. I deplore it. I think it's terrible. We need a fair and equitable system when it comes to voting. And frankly, I had to put, my effort behind someone who's willing to take on the challenge and reform the system. And that's why I backed her.
Sure. And Chris, one other thing before we wrap it up here. And obviously, this has been a big chunk of the news, both here on our station and all across the state. Chris, as I look right now at this change.org petition, you've got almost 47,000 people, which is not an insignificant amount of people, signing on to this saying, hey, we have to do something not only about the public benefits charge on our electric bills, but about this whole thing in general. And Chris, it just shows that even beyond the people that work and represent us in the General Assembly, you know, the regular folk, the civilians like you now and me, we can have our voice heard. And apparently now some of the people in the Hartford are listening on this.
Well, I when I served in the legislature, the most impact was when people spoke up, when they demanded change. And that's when things occur. And, you know, that's the beauty of our system. You know, people criticize our democracy at times. We hear it now in the campaigns about the system not working, the government this, the government that. The beauty of it is that if people just rally around something, get up and speak up, petition drives, calling their elected officials, going to Hartford, you will see change. I noticed without exception in Hartford that issues took place, legislation passed when the public spoke up and said something. But when people just sit back and let it go, guess what happens? Nothing takes place. And we see it even in supermarkets. You see what's happening now. Because of the more there's more competition in the grocery stores. You're seeing stores closing. You're seeing consolidation of stores because, you know, you look at one store who's selling products at a cheaper rate than another store. And all that's related to consumers. If the consumers say, hey, we're not going to take it anymore, stores, corporations start to adjust to the needs of those consumers. Mm-hmm. Same thing in the legislature. The consumer is the voter. The consumer is the citizen. And if they speak out and demand change, you will see it. Believe me, it's like anything else.
Yeah.
You know, politicians respond. They want to respond. They want to, you know, try to correct the situation. And they'll only do it when the public says enough is enough. So I applaud it, Paul. And I think it will bring, you know, things in line. You know, the regulatory system in the state, we've had issues with.
Mm-hmm.
And there is the chairman of the board for PURA. She's trying to make change. She's trying to make it performance-based. So that way the utilities are judged on what they do and their performance, which is the way it should be.
Yeah.
And, you know, this issue we're seeing now with the rates going up as high as they are is going to be part of that. So it's going to take some time, but we've got to be willing to put the effort in to make the change. It's just that simple.
All right, Chris Caruso. Chris, as always, great stuff. Have a happy weekend, and we'll chat next week, sir. Thank you.
Yes, you too, Paul.
All right, Chris, take care.